actresses or by the same actors, but you can't expect to get to a peaceful, sustainable, and just society by acts of violence and injustice. If the goal is to have democracy, if the goal is to have freedom, if the goal is to have peace, those things have to be built with the long, slow, hard work of peaceful action, of respect for other people and their values and their cultures, and of listening as well as of talking, and certainly of acting in ways that are constructive and not destructive, not killing people, not disappearing people, not injuring or wounding or repressing people.
Is there anything else you want to say before we wrap this up?
Just that in Portland specifically, this visit carries special weight because one of the many victims of violence sponsored by the U.S. in Nicaragua was someone who lived in Portland, Ben Linder. In Nicaragua, killed by the Contras, he was assisting the civilian population in improving their standard of living by building small hydroelectric dams. And the Contras targeted specifically things that made civilian life better. It was not a war of military against military. It was a war of armed actors against civilians. One of the victims was Ben Linder, who was working, as just described, to help make the lives of people in Nicaragua better. And people to this day remember him, remember many people from the U.S. who acted not in this violent, terroristic way that was typified by our government, unfortunately, at the time, but in a constructive way of involvement, engagement, and solidarity represented by people like Ben Linder.
Great. I've been talking with John Walsh. He is with Witness for Peace, and we've been discussing along with Sharon Maxwell earlier the upcoming visit this weekend by Mr. Oliver North, who I guess his greatest claim to infamy is his connection and deep involvement, if not being the central player in the Iran-Contra scandal back in the Reagan administration in the mid-80s. Thank you for your time, Mr. Walsh.
Thank you.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Up next is Out Loud, but first these messages.
Looks like these kids are going to have some fun, doesn't it?
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of PDX Cocoon and their first public storytelling event on Thursday, March 12th at 5 p.m. at Lola's Room in Portland. The theme of this first storytelling event is risk.
Seems to be only
PDX Cocoon is a student-led group that is working to facilitate storytelling for Portland youth through workshops and events. Again, that's Episode 1, Risk, by PDX Cocoon on Thursday, March 12th, 5 p.m. at Lola's Room, below the Crystal Ballroom at 1332 West Burnside in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the home page under Community Events.
I'd sure hate to be left out.
Tune into KBOO every weekday at 7 p.m. for Hard Knock Radio. News and views from a hip-hop perspective with Davey D. Hard Knock Radio features in-depth interviews and profiles with community leaders, activists, hip-hop artists, and musicians, giving voice to community concerns and offering a unique forum to explore issues relevant to hip-hop community. That's every weekday at 7 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
Welcome to Out Loud, dear listeners. Welcome tonight here on KBOO. Tonight we've got Adam and Benjamin here to talk about some particular health issues, some of which are becoming talked about quite extensively here in the city. And some of this might be pretty new to folks. So we're gonna work through some of the topics we've got on our plate tonight fairly slowly so that folks can get a sense of what it is we're talking about. So welcome.
Welcome, Alan. Thank you for having us on the show.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us here this evening, and thanks to all the listeners at home as well.
So tell us what you do here in Portland.
Yeah, so my name is Adam Catanzarite, and I am a HIV prevention specialist at Cascade AIDS Project, and I also do some CareLink navigation services. So what that means is I work on the prevention side to help prevent the spread of HIV infection in the Portland area, and I do that through a number of different programs, rapid HIV testing, having individual counseling sessions with folks about their HIV risk, and then I also, on the other side of things, work with folks who are newly diagnosed as HIV positive to get them connected to medical care and any other services that might benefit them.
And that's what CareLink is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what our CareLink program does.
Yeah, and I've had the honor of serving our community since 2008, working in the field of sexual health. I've worked in a combination of different settings. I've done everything from outreach work, which I continue to do. My job title right now is Prevention with Positives Coordinator, so I work primarily with individuals living with HIV. I facilitate a number of life skills programs, everything from medication adherence to discussions about HIV disclosure, negotiation of safer sex practices with a sex partner or partners, and some other activities that are merely social as well, ways that people living with HIV can meet others who are also HIV positive, like myself. I've been positive since 2008, and it can be a struggle, and it can be easy, I guess, to isolate oneself and sort of detach from a sense of community. So with a lot of my programs, I seek to reestablish that community, empower individuals who are HIV positive to promote healthy outcomes, not only for themselves, but healthy outcomes for our entire community.
Now, Before we dig in a little further to the topics we're going to talk about tonight, I want to let folks know you can call in and ask questions or make comments. The phone number for the studio is 503-231-8187, 231-8187. All right, so what do we have on the plate tonight?
Well, we were hoping to talk about a couple of things that are, you know, hot on the lips of many folks who are identifying as gay or bi or trans folks within the community. And so we're hoping to just to provide some more information about topics that are, you know, hot topics right now. So we were hoping to talk about PrEP and some new information relating to syphilis here in Oregon, and then some additional health information.
Okay, so let's talk about syphilis. There was a town hall. It was put on by the county, is that right? Mm-hmm. Just last week at Q Center on what appears to be a sharp rise in cases of syphilis in our fair town.
Yeah, so we've seen a substantial increase, not only here in Portland, but across the country in terms of the rates of syphilis. And syphilis is a sexually transmitted infection. It's a bacterial infection. I think one of the reasons why the rates are currently as high as they are is syphilis is very easily transmitted. A lot of people wonder, well, if I have a sexually transmitted infection, what will the symptoms be? How will I know that something has gone awry? With syphilis, it's often referred to as being the great imitator. And the reason for that is its symptoms can be very mild and can imitate a variety of different health conditions. One of the telltale signs that somebody may have recently contracted syphilis, the primary symptom is usually a sore that will appear about 1 to 2 weeks after point of infection. The sore, it sort of looks a little bit but like a nasty spider bite. It's entirely painless, and it could be anywhere on the body, and it could also be inside of the body. And looking at the latter inside of the body, if the sore were, say, in my mouth, in my throat, potentially in my anus or in my rectum, or in a vagina, it's possibly more likely than not that I wouldn't even notice that it was there. That sore is highly, highly infectious. So with syphilis, one of the reasons why it's very easily transmitted, anything that were to rub up against that sore is enough for a transmission to take place. When we're working with individuals and we're having conversations about condom use or lack thereof, some people may be using condoms very consistently for activities such as anal intercourse or vaginal intercourse. And that's a fantastic way to protect oneself from contracting HIV. But with syphilis, a lot of these cases, and I think a reason why the cases are so high, is a lot of the transmissions can take place through oral sex because it just requires that contact with the sore wherever it is on a sex partner's person. We do have, I guess, quite some have said outbreak of syphilis here locally. In terms of the numbers, we've had about a 10 to 30 times increase since 2012 in terms of new cases diagnosed here in Portland. Back in the late 90s, public health officials were sort of celebrating, thinking that all of our efforts had been successful and we had completely eliminated syphilis as a concern across the entire country. And somewhat similar to a lot of different infectious diseases, syphilis tends to go on, I guess, this sort of roller coaster ride, as if you will, of when the rates will be really high, just as they were in the early 90s, and then they went down to almost being eliminated in the late 90s, back up in the early 2000s, back down in 2007, and what we've seen since 2012 has just been a huge increase, higher than we've ever seen with tracking it as a sexually transmitted infection. In terms of percentages of the increase, locally here in the county, our increase has been the order of 1,000% over the past 2 years in particular. And I think one of the biggest reasons why raising awareness about syphilis is important is it definitely is a contributing factor, just as other sexually transmitted infections are a contributing factor to placing an individual at higher risk for contracting HIV. Or looking at somebody like myself who's currently HIV positive, throwing another sexually transmitted infection into the mix greatly increases the likelihood of somebody living with HIV passing that virus on to a partner or partners. And being aware of how high the rates are is one thing. I would definitely encourage everybody who's listening to this show to consider if you are currently sexually active and you've been with more than one partner, to come in for testing, not only for syphilis, but for HIV and for other sexually transmitted infections as well. I think singling out syphilis in particular, that's probably the single best thing that we could do, both for our own sexual health and for the health of our own community. talking with others about, well, the rates of syphilis look like they're pretty high. What are we going to do about it? Definitely the best thing is get tested, find out your status. The great part about syphilis, if there is a great part, is it's very easily cured. So it's just some penicillin that somebody can get access to if they test positive. And it's a very simple procedure to clear it. And I firmly believe that the more people that we get in for testing, the more that we'll see the rates come down and hopefully get us back to that level that we were at in the late 90s, where we're celebrating because it looks like we've got it down to a rate where we could potentially say that we've eliminated syphilis from being a concern. There's other reasons why it's important to get tested for syphilis as well. Syphilis is one of those conditions where if left untreated for a substantial amount of time, it can actually do some pretty severe damage to the body, but it could also do severe damage to the brain as well. Many people may recall the stories of the past of, say, like Al Capone dying of syphilis. I would hate to ever see that occur within our county, given all the prevention, all the education, the testing resources, the access to the penicillin that we have here locally. But I think it is something important to be aware of, that from point of infection to developing potentially irreversible brain damage is around 7 years for somebody who's HIV negative. Looking at somebody who's HIV positive, the irreversible brain damage could be developed within the first year. So I don't want to say that, I guess, to sound an alarm, but I just think it's important for everyone to be educated about what syphilis is, some of the symptoms that could be associated, and given how high these rates are, that everybody have a conversation with themselves about getting tested. And if you're out with your friends, out in the bars, if you're going to be going in for testing, maybe encourage a friend to come along as well, because I think it's the single best thing that we can do to combat what's happening with syphilis.
Now, if folks don't have access to a primary care physician or simply don't want to have this conversation with their general practitioner, where can folks go to get tested?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, because that's something that we see quite a bit and something that we have conversations with people about if they are comfortable talking about sexual health with their primary care provider or not. If they are, fantastic. If they're not, we can work with individuals for some self-advocacy tips or potentially referrals to a provider who might be more culturally aware for working with them. Regardless of how comfortable or not a person may be with their medical provider, individuals could always get tested for syphilis at Cascade AIDS Project anytime that we're open, which is 10 a.m. Well, the testing is offered 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. We also have a community resource space called Pivot, which is specifically for individuals who identify as gay, bisexual men, pansexual, queer, also people who are transgender. We offer syphilis testing, HIV testing anytime that the Pivot space is open, which is located downtown, right across the street from the Big Pink U.S. Bank Tower. It's on the street level of 4th Avenue at 209 Southwest 4th Avenue. The hours of operation, with some of our testing services, it sort of shifts around on Tuesday evening. So tonight, we offer full testing for all sexually transmitted infections from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. On Wednesdays, we offer full testing from 1 p.m. to 3:30. And then Wednesdays, we're also open until 7 p.m. Thursdays through Saturdays, we're open 2 to 7. Thursday through Saturday, anybody can come in to get an HIV test and also get tested for syphilis. I also want to acknowledge that the Multnomah County Health Department, personally, I feel very fortunate to live in Portland and have an amazing public health resource that is the Multnomah County Health Department. They're open 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. Anyone can always schedule an appointment with them by calling 503-988-3700. And their providers have an incredible level of cultural awareness for working with communities that are impacted heavily by HIV and sexually transmitted infections. They offer full STI screenings during those times, and they've been really effective leaders at raising awareness about syphilis in the community as well.
Wonderful. We're going to take a little break and come back. Some more information for you. Thanks.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair-accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
Hey, your love away from me, we can't hide. Hey, your love away from me, it was in my mood. Hey, your love away from me, you can't hide. Hey, your love away from me,
Welcome back to Out Loud. That was LCD Sound System and Reggie Watts, the last show, 2011. I still can't stop listening to that record. Adam, thanks for being here. What do you have for us?
Well, Alan, I was hoping to talk to all the listeners about PrEP. And so PrEP is something that's sort of just flooding the scene a little bit in the queer culture. Queer as like an umbrella term for LGBTQ, Q, I, A, P, X, Y, Z, element of P, all of the identities that, you know, fall outside of heterosexual or cisgender. So, yeah, so PrEP is something that is fairly new and available to folks who might be engaging in some sexual activity that could be putting them at risk for HIV. And it's appearing more in print advertisement. It's appearing on popular gay-themed television. Recently, Looking addressed, you know, the idea and the issues associated with taking PrEP. And it's also, you know, just out there on the internet and in conversations that a lot of people are having. And so PrEP, it stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis. And what that means is that it's something that you can take to help prevent someone being infected with HIV. And the way that it currently looks right now is that it's a pill. It's Truvada, which is a part of a concoction that folks who are currently HIV positive can take to help reduce their viral load. And so individuals who are currently HIV negative, they can take it as well, but it's just a single pill for them to help prevent HIV infection.
So how does this work? I mean, a person would approach a doctor and say, this is what I'm interested in, and it's sorted out?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So there isn't like a clear-cut path to get started on PrEP, but the way that a lot of folks are getting access to it is to talk to their primary care physician or their doctor and just say, hey, I've heard about PrEP. Is PrEP something that might work for me? And then if the doctor is even aware of PrEP, they should be having a conversation about potential risk. They should talk about the guidelines that the CDC has for following adherence to the medication and what sort of testing is required of an individual to see if PrEP might actually work with their body or might not. And so PrEP is something that you need a prescription for currently. And so you can't just, you know, pop into the drugstore and ask the pharmacist, hey, can I have this? If you're keeping it behind the counter, you need to have that prescription in order to access the medication. And one of the main reasons for that is because it's not something that is a tool for everyone. It is something that individuals need to take once a day as per the CDC's current guidelines. And routine HIV testing needs to be a part of someone's regimen if they're on PrEP. And the reason for that is because you don't want to take a medication that's meant for just HIV negative people if you're living with HIV. So if you become infected, you don't want to just be taking one part of the concoction that would help prevent, you know, the spread of the virus within someone's body. So routine testing is a requirement. And so that looks about testing every 3 to 4 months for HIV. And you also want to get some screening done to see if, you know, PrEP is going to work well with your body. So there's going to be some blood tests that your doctor will probably order just to see how your body's working and check liver and kidney function to see if, you know, the medication will be able to go through the body and do what it's intended to do.
This medication, Truvada, does it come with a lot of side effects?
Yeah, so some folks have experienced some side effects, other folks not so much. During the uptake period, what I've heard from folks is that they may feel some, you know, nausea or indigestion or maybe some headaches. But not a lot of individuals have experienced these side effects long term. So just when they're starting to take PrEP, they may experience some of these symptoms. But a lot of the folks that I've talked to, they said that they go away after a couple of weeks or a month or so once they've started.
Now, what about the cost of the medication? How much is that a factor in folks being able to use it? How much is it a barrier?
Right. So medication is often a barrier to a lot of people because medication, the prices are rising. And, Truvada is no exception to that. Alone on itself, Truvada can be up to around, generally speaking, $2,000 for an individual who wants to pay out of pocket if they don't have insurance or if they don't want to use insurance to access the medication.
That's $2,000 per...
Per month.
Per month.
Yes. So for a 30-day supply, $2,000 or so. So that is not so accessible for a lot of individuals, unfortunately. There are some things that individuals can do to get access to PrEP. So a lot of insurance providers will cover PrEP. And depending upon the plans they have, it could fall into a regular or specialty tier. So insurance should help bring the cost down significantly and make it more accessible for a lot of individuals. There's also drug assistance programs. I know that the makers of Truvada have a couple of programs where you can sign up and get the medication at a reduced cost. There's also a really great program that Washington State has. It's called PrepDAP, or PrEP Drug Assistance Program. And so individuals who qualify as high risk or at risk for HIV, they can get access to the medication for free or at a greatly reduced cost. So that's for Washington State residents. I know that folks here in Oregon, all of the health officials, they're looking to bring a similar program to our state.
Wonderful. So that's PrEP. Tell us about PEP.
PEP. So PEP and PrEP are often associated with each other. There is a little bit of a difference aside from just the little R in between the other letters. So PEP stands for post-exposure prophylaxis. So PrEP is pre-exposure prophylaxis, meaning you take it before a potential exposure to help protect yourself. PEP stands for post-exposure prophylaxis. So this is for individuals who think they may have been exposed to HIV. So let's say that I had condomless sex with someone and there was an exchange of fluids. And either I didn't know what their HIV status was, or if my sex partner was HIV positive, or if I, may have had a couple of cocktails and not remember exactly what happened during the night, PEP might be an option for me. So it's separate from PrEP in that it's not a Truvada necessarily. It's a combination of medications that an individual would need to take throughout a 30-day period in order to help prevent the virus from taking hold in someone's body.
How effective is PEP?
So you have to start PEP within a certain time period. There is a 72-hour time period in which you need to start medication for it to be effective. And so if you follow the medication schedule and you are within that window period, it is fairly effective at preventing the virus from getting hold of your body.
And I'm going back to PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis. Who might benefit from this? Who should be considering starting this regimen?
Absolutely. So there's a number of individuals who might benefit from taking PEP. PrEP. And that could be individuals who are engaging in high-risk sexual activity. And so that could be individuals who are, not so, not great fans of using condoms, or if they have trouble using condoms due to the fact that, it's reduces the stimulation for them, or if they don't have regular access to condoms, or if they're in a situation where their partner doesn't want them to use condoms, this might be a tool for them. So it also might be a great tool for individuals who engage in sex work as an additional tool to protect themselves. I know that often in sex work, folks are willing to pay more if there's less of a barrier. So condomless sex often goes for a higher price. And so this might be a way to help those individuals protect themselves. Individuals who are in a serodiscordant relationship might benefit from that. So if someone in a relationship is HIV positive and they're dating someone who is HIV negative, that HIV negative individual might benefit from that extra security of taking PrEP. Individuals who've also gotten an STI infection, so chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, things like that, if they've had a couple of infections or so in the last year, they might consider taking PrEP as well. PrEP will not prevent any other STI infections. So a lot of individuals think that they can go ahead and just take PrEP and it'll protect them from all types of infections. It's certainly not, you know, a panacea, not a cure for everything. So someone would still be at risk for contracting chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, things like that, if they are engaging in condomless sex. So the CDC currently suggests that folks who are taking PrEP, they use it in conjunction with condoms or other preventative tools. So
wonderful. 503-231-8187 for questions and comments. We're going to switch tracks and talk with Benjamin about anal dysplasia.
Yeah, so anal dysplasia, I guess when I say those two words, everybody's maybe going, what in the butt? I recognize the word anal, but dysplasia, you know, what is he talking about? So anal dysplasia refers to essentially a development of abnormal cells within the anus, and some of those cells potentially being precancerous or cancerous. The forms of precancerous cells and cancerous cells in this context is directly attributed to HPV or human papilloma virus. Drastically different from HIV, but nonetheless something that's good to be educated about, aware of, and know what we can do as individuals if you feel like it may be necessary to get checked for anal dysplasia. So I'll mention that HPV, the human papilloma virus, is a very common virus. It's safe to assume that I likely already have HPV. Around 90% of the U.S. population does have some form of this virus, which is sexually transmitted. The good news is there's about 100 different strains of HPV, the vast majority of which will not go on to cause any type of health complications. So aside from two strains that are known to contribute to either precancerous or cancerous cell growth, anal dysplasia, the other 98 strains of the virus are known not to cause any type of health complications, not to cause wart manifestations, which is probably the thing that most readily comes to mind when thinking about HPV. The rates of HPV, particularly for HIV-positive men and women, is fairly high, and the rates of HPV in particular that are known to go on to develop into precancerous and cancerous cell growth is very high in the HIV-positive community. one of the great things, and I want to again acknowledge the work of a lot of public health officials, a lot of the work that we've done at Cascade AIDS Project, has been to put this on people's radars, and in particular put this on health systems' radars as being a crucial issue impacting particularly people who are HIV positive. It doesn't just impact people who are HIV positive, but the rates of anal dysplasia or the rates of, say, cervical cancer, which is also directly linked to the human papillomavirus. If you're HIV positive, it's about 10 times that of somebody who's HIV negative. The work that we've done with the health systems, and in particular the immune deficiency clinics, has translated into a lot of the clinics, at least here in Portland, having their own anal dysplasia resource within the clinic. So if a patient is going in, say, to have their blood drawn to measure their viral load, which is typically done every 3 months for somebody who's HIV positive, most of the local HIV clinics have it on their radar to check for dysplasia by either doing an anal pap smear or doing a vaginal pap smear once a year. The nice part about providers doing that is anal cancer related to anal which is a manifestation of anal dysplasia, is a very slow progressing cancer. Typically, it would take about 20 years for anal cancer or cervical cancer to develop to a point where it would require some pretty comprehensive, pretty complex treatments. The nice part about having a provider check annually is if there is a regular cell growth in the anus, or if there's a regular cell growth in an HIV-positive woman's cervix, the treatments to take care of that are very minimally invasive and don't require, I guess, any substantial recovery from the procedure. It's usually just a very simple, sometimes it's a laser, sometimes it's freezing the cell, but a very simple procedure, and a person's on their way and doesn't have to worry about it developing into something further. I do think even though we see anal dysplasia more readily within the HIV positive community, I think it's something that's important for anybody, regardless of HIV status, to have a conversation with their medical provider and see about potentially getting a pap smear done themselves. HPV, many of our listeners may have been familiar with Michael Douglas, the famous actor who went on record, I think it was about a year ago, saying that his throat cancer diagnosis he felt was directly attributed to human papillomavirus. We don't currently have a pap smear to be able to check people's throats. I know there are some of those tests in development, but HPV is not something that just could impact a rectum or a vagina. It's also something that could impact the throat. Again, I want to stress the great news is the vast majority of strains with HPV don't cause any health complications whatsoever. But certainly, if you're living with HIV and you haven't had a pap smear done within the past year, I would strongly encourage everybody in that situation to have a conversation with your medical provider. It's very, very important that they're checking for it. If there's something irregular, they'll take care of it with minimal procedure. And if you're HIV negative, I would also encourage you to have a conversation with your provider as well. There is a vaccine that's available to inoculate or essentially make somebody immune to contracting the human papillomavirus. It doesn't protect somebody against all of the strains, but it does protect somebody against the strains that are known to be highly likely to develop into precancerous and cancerous cell growth. It's called the Gardasil vaccine. The uptake in terms of both women and men getting access to the vaccine has been a little bit concerning in that the numbers have been very, very low. And here we have a virus which is directly linked to causing cancer, and we in reality have a vaccine that can prevent cancer. So right now, public health officials are recommending that girls between the ages of 13 and 17 access the Gardasil vaccine, and also for men as well up to age 24. It's a three-dose vaccination, and it definitely is highly effective when it comes to preventing HPV infection with the strains that are known to cause cancer. Here in Oregon, we've done a little bit better than the national average in terms of the uptake on the vaccine. Last year, we were successful in terms of providing the vaccine to 57% of girls within that age range of 13 to 17 years of age. Unfortunately, I don't have the statistics in terms of how many boys and how many men access the vaccine. But the national average for only women was only 36%. So maybe a kudos to the public health officials here in the state of Oregon. I mean, when you have a vaccine that can prevent cancer, I think that's a pretty good vaccine to have at one's disposal. And I would encourage our youth, if you aren't currently vaccinated, to have a conversation with your provider about gaining access to the vaccine. I want to mention that we are going to be having a forum on anal dysplasia. It's called Cover Your, well, I'll use the word butt, considering we're on community radio, but you could go on to the Pivot Facebook page and Pivot Twitter feed if you want to see what the actual, I guess, cover your is. And the topic is going to be anal dysplasia. We're very fortunate that we have one of the areas, one of the country's best medical providers. He's a licensed nurse practitioner working in the HIV immune deficiency clinic within Kaiser and the Multnomah County Health Department. His name's Jim McDonald. He's done an enormous amount of work in terms of putting it on HIV clinics' radars as to why it's important that providers are talking with their HIV-positive patients about dysplasia and checking for it on a routine basis. That's going to be happening on, I'll pass it across to my colleague for the day and time.
Yeah, so it's one of the presentations that our Access Talks program is putting on, and that's going to be on Wednesday, March 25th from 5 to 7 downtown in the Pivot space. And we're going to be talking, like as Benjamin said, about anal health. And, you know, so if you are putting anything in there and enjoying it, you should come on down and learn some new information. We are also going to be giving some door prizes to individuals who attend as well. So we hope to see a full room full of people who are willing and able to break down the taboo of talking about your behind.
Yeah. And one of the quieter threads in here is that even if you're not sexually active, if you have been in the past, all of these issues are concerns. They continue to be concerns. And so you're those folks who aren't currently sexually active but have been, you should be thinking about getting tested as well and talking with medical professionals about what's appropriate testing-wise.
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to... we have a call. Welcome, caller.
Hi, I've been listening to you guys. I'm calling from Salem. I've never heard of the Pep and Prep, but over the years, I just wanted to share that there are some enzymes folks can get at just local health food stores that reduce viral loads. I don't know that they, you know, have the efficacy of some of the things you guys have been talking about, but they are certainly within a more affordable price range, and I've personally had experience with and have had others comment on like just simple herpes infections clearing up really quickly, and there's even some doctors who have studies online where they prescribe enzymes to any other medications for things like, say, herpes, because they have proven to be just so much more effective. So folks may be interested in looking up VirusStop X2, which now has its name changed to Enzyme Defense. It's a product by Enzymedica, and again, I don't know if it conquers viral loads like some of the stuff you guys are talking about, but I've used it for years in the same way you guys are talking about PEP and PrEP. And again, it's something that I think people could just go into a health food store and ask for that product. And, you know, it may be an in-between for those folks who can't afford, you know, these other things. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. And the really great thing about what you said is that you are taking your health into your hands, and you're considering, you know, you're trying to make it work for yourself. Not everyone has access to all of these amazing resources. And so we certainly do recommend that individuals check in with their medical provider just to make sure that whatever they are taking is working well with their body and not creating any adverse effects. And that there are studies to show that it is proven effective. Not everyone agrees with, you know, Western medicine. Some individuals are taking other supplements or herbs to combat any type of infection or health challenge that they may be having. What we do recommend, though, is that folks do see a provider, because there is lots of testing that is required to make sure that something is going to work with the body, and do it in a way that it was intended. So with PrEP, as as I said earlier, there is a lot of testing that goes into it. So someone wants to make sure that they are HIV negative before they start taking something that might change their body chemistry a little bit. And so we encourage folks to talk to their provider, whether they have one or not, to go out and find one. And if it turns out that you don't like the information that you're getting from your provider, you can fire your doctor. That's something that a lot of people don't know, because often they feel like they're a part of a larger medical system and they're just assigned a doctor. But you can fire your doctor. Everyone take note of that. Write it down. If they are not treating you with respect, or if they aren't exploring options that you would like to explore, you can ask to see a different doctor or go through the process of getting assigned to a different primary care physician.
Wonderful. Thanks, Adam. We're going to hear a short bit of music, and then we're going to come back with something a little bit different. Welcome back to Out Loud. Thank you, Madonna Gambler. Do we remember what that was from? Was it from the wrestling movie, I think? We're going way back there. Adam and Benjamin, thank you for all of this great information. Where can folks find CAP, Cascade AIDS Project?
Yeah, so folks can access CAP in a number of different ways. You can go online to www.cascadeaids.org. You can also come by our office, which is at 208 Southwest 5th Avenue in downtown Portland, across from Big Pink, as Benjamin said, right near the Burnside Street. You can also give us a call. We have a hotline. It's 1-800-777-AIDS, and folks can call in with their questions that they may have. We do have a voicemail, so you can go ahead and leave us a confidential voicemail, and we'll get back to you with some answers and some options of how you might move forward with maybe some new tools.
Absolutely, and thank you for being part of a couple of decades of great work by Cascade AIDS Project in our community.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us here this evening, and I appreciate that you brought up decades. Yeah, we are celebrating, I guess, our 30th anniversary, or I guess I should say honoring our 30th anniversary of serving the community. We do have an event that's coming up in May. On May 2nd, we're hosting our annual art auction. It's an amazing coming together of local artists who are committed to the cause of preventing new HIV infections, supporting and empowering individuals who are HIV infected and families that are affected, and promoting the work towards health equity. Mm-hmm. That's going to be happening at Montgomery Park this year. If anybody's interested in finding out more about tickets, you could go on to capartauction.org, and we're hoping to see a really strong attendance in support of that event. It's one of my favorite events every year.
Wonderful. And thanks for all of the artists who contribute to it.
Benjamin included. I know that he had some pieces previous years. And so maybe Benjamin might have something to show this year as well.
Wonderful. Speaking of art, or maybe not speaking of art, I don't know. I thought we could use these last 2 minutes to talk about Madonna. We were talking about her a little bit before we started the show, just because she's getting so much attention right now. It really has reclaimed the spotlight. And what the heck does that mean? We're not very long to talk about it. And if anybody wants to call back, call in the next 90 seconds to tell us whether Gambler was from the Matthew Modine wrestling movie or from Desperately Seeking Susan. I'd be grateful. But anything that you want to say about how Madonna has made herself so prominent? What does that mean for us? What does that mean for you?
Yeah, I think Madonna, back in her heyday, was breaking down a lot of barriers, talking about things that weren't, out in the public discourse. So she started to reclaim her sexuality, and heck, she even published a book about sex. I think it's actually called Sex. All the Madonna fans are probably like, no, it's called this. I think that she really pushed the envelope and pushed people's comfort zones back in the heyday. So I think that's stuck with a lot of folks.
And I would echo the same. I just really appreciate how she brought sexual expression to the fore and provided, I guess, what I consider to be the truth, that the human body is absolutely beautiful in various shapes, sizes, however a person wants to express themselves in their life experience. And a part of that experience included is sexuality and how one decides to express that self. At the end of the day, there's a ton of books and things that are written about sexuality, but I firmly believe that each individual has the right to decide for themselves what their identities are and what they the way that they choose to express their own sexuality. So I acknowledge her contributions to moving that forward.
Wonderful. So I was on pirate radio some years ago, and I worked in this restaurant for, you know, you have to do these icebreakers, and you have to figure out how to talk to all these strangers. So for about 2 years, my icebreaker was, what's your least favorite Madonna song? And I compiled the results. And on pirate radio, I did a show counting down the 15 least favorite Madonna songs as voted on by Portland. I'm going to tease you there because we're out of time, and you'll have to come back another day to find out what the results were. Or I could could sell you a copy of the program for like 30 cents. but it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to do. It was a lot of fun to tap into that. We're back next Tuesday at 6 p.m. Boston. We'll be bringing you Out Loud. Upcoming now is Hard Knock Radio. We're going to close out with music. Thanks so much, listeners.